you from the Associated Foundations Training Center aboard Battleship Iowa. It's another exciting episode of our podcast, Scuttlebutt, the official podcast of the National Museum of the Surface Navy. Joining me today in the studio is some of the regular cast. We have Captain Roundup. Have you changed that nickname yet?
I don't think it's up to me to change the nickname.
No, well, you could do something that would get you a new nickname.
And nicknames are assigned, and you need to earn
it. They're kind of like call signs. We did a whole episode on that.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's Kyle Abbe. He's our director of development. And Mike Getcher, the chief operating officer, executive vice president, a whole slew of titles.
Chief engineer, nuts and bolts, whatever.
Man about town, all around good guy, friend of the downtrodden, uplifter of those in need.
Don't go too far.
And Marianne Fengler, our producer and button pusher. Button pusher.
Ice queen, all of the other things. Yeah, what was the other queen. One?
And host.
Oh, keel hauler.
Yeah, and a host.
Keel hauler.
Yes. I like skater, but that has a connotation in the Navy.
She's a co-host, not the host.
No, I took the co-host away from myself. So that
how generous.
Bad move, Ben. Bad move.
So, my name's David Camfield. I'm Vice President and Chief Information Officer. And joining us today on the podcast is Ben Poucher. Did I get that right? Poucher?
Yeah.
Poucher.
Ben, sorry. Friends call me Poucher, but I don't know. They have their own way about them.
Yeah, well, you know, friends with for some value of. He is the director of Warrior Sailing, which is a nationwide program that trains injured veterans in sailing skill. And that is the sum total of my knowledge about the program, which is why he's on the podcast today to tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the invite. Anytime that we can talk about the program and talk about what we do and get like-minded folks together and discuss ways that we can help the wounded, ill, and injured veteran community, I think that everybody benefits. So I appreciate the invite.
Ben, we chatted a little bit while we were having some technical difficulties getting everything online, and you told us all about the program, and so I'm going to ask you to tell us all about the program again.
Yeah, so you guys were asking a lot about just the basics of the program. So Warrior Sailing is a nationwide program, like was said earlier. So we host three-day basic level certification courses to teach wounded, ill, and injured veterans how to sail. So in layman's term, or a civilian term in my neck of the woods, it's anybody from cancer survivors to spinal cord injuries. We take anybody in between, any age, and we recruit them to come to a basic level course where we teach the skill of sailing. I think that's one of our biggest things that separates us from a lot of other programs. We're here to introduce people to the sailing community, introduce them to the basic skills. We host basic training camps all over the country, usually in locations that we've been going back to for a little while that are close to a VA hospital system, close to a large military population. So our basic training camps are in Annapolis, San Diego, and St. Petersburg, Florida. And it's a three-day intense learn to sail. You have a coach on board, three veterans, and I bring in folks from my sailing career and they get to come in and help us coach the wounded, ill, and injured veterans. And the program was started in 2013, and we've had now 590 folks go through the basic level course since we started. And we're a progressive program. So what I found in starting this program with a couple of friends and my coworkers was, I think that a lot of veteran programs, they have people come for like one day or a weekend and they show people a great time, but there's no continued connection. So like there's no what's next type step. And I think that what we're doing and what we've done over the last couple of years is start to incorporate a lot of next steps for people that have graduated from a basic training camp. So you start with us, we give you the basic skills. Hopefully you feel comfortable enough to go to a sailing or go sailing with your friends and have an idea what's happening so you can introduce yourself, but also what's next with Warrior Sailing. So we do certification courses. We do a basic course, a 101. We do a 103 coastal cruising cert. And what I was kind of explaining to you guys earlier was like we've kind of taken what was originally a race program and doing racing and kind of getting into that. That was kind of the goal. And we've changed that over the last couple of years to do more cruising and more safety at sea and more safety training and just kind of general knowledge so that people have and feel comfortable going out with their family and friends. So That's the basis of the program. We're a small program. We're run by four people, and we do everything from recruitment to logistics to the actual coaching at the camps. Moran's actually been to a couple of our basic camps that have been out in San Diego, and we keep refining it, and hopefully we keep improving. We keep relying on the Warrior to tell us what they would like next, because this program's about them. It's not really about us. And the additional program that we do during the year, we go to Charleston Race Week every year. We have a couple regattas and a couple outreach deliveries. Like, we do have an outreach network that connects the veteran and warrior to the sailing community so that they have some additional opportunities beyond our camps. And we come up to the Great Lakes every year, which is where I'm at right now. I'm in Charlevoix, Michigan, which is a little town up in northern Michigan, just north of where I grew up. And I grew up coming in this lake, so I got a chance to bring the program back here. And we come here in the summer, so we're here July, August, and September. And we do a 103 coastal cruising cert, hopefully adding more of those. And we also do the big Chicago to Mackinac race every year. We've done that for 4 years now with some of our more advanced warriors that would like to go racing. We put them in a pathway, so they come up here. We do a safety at sea certification, offshore training, go do the race, participate in a couple different regattas up here. And I'm trying to get more warriors involved to the point where they become coaches too. So we have a directorship program up here.
That's very cool.
You know, it's really changed my life. This has been a pretty crazy evolution from being a boat captain and working in the sailing industry on private boats and racing professionally to having the opportunity to give back. And I think, you know, we need to make shirts, Moran, for like all the professional sailors that I bring out of either retirement or being in burnout stage of racing sailboats professionally. And they need a shirt that's like, I completed a camp, you know, Warrior Sailing help the retired, you know, sailor help somebody else. Because there's, I've heard this multiple times that racing sailboats, you know, it's fantastic, it's fun, and it's great, but what's the greater good? And a lot of guys and gals and everybody just in general love to give back, and finding ways to do that. I'm so blessed that I get a chance to do it every day and go raise the money to make sure that this is free for the warrior. So they shouldn't have to pay for this sort of thing. So I'm out knocking on doors and making sure people either donate their boats to us or give us cash to make sure that these opportunities are free.
Nice. Wow. I have a dozen questions that popped up. The first one, and I'll just jump in there, and hopefully everybody else will have other things. You mentioned any age. What's the oldest warrior that you've taken out?
Oh, man. You know, it's like, so Corey is our, he's our in-house non-sailor logistics manager. He does everything land-based, and he does all the recruitment, all the applications come to him. He could probably answer that a lot better because he gets everybody's information and then he coordinates the camps. But we've had some Vietnam vets that have come sailing with us. I think the dynamic and the camaraderie that you get between a Vietnam vet of that age who actually had to do a lot of this work that we're seeing professionals and programs like ours assist the younger folks, they had to do this on their own. And I think it's a pretty unique dynamic to have people who have been through a lot of this psychological, you know, a lot of like isolation, depression, PTS, holding down jobs when they came back from Vietnam in a different environment than we see now. We see a lot more support nowadays than we did when they came back politically. So, you know, I think that's an amazing dynamic. But the majority of our folks that end up coming to our camps are mid-30s. I think that we have a little bit younger active population that comes to our camps because they see and have heard from their other friends that we're an instruction-based program that gives us and gives people an opportunity to get involved in something they might not have been able to otherwise. So our link to the sailing network and then also to actually teach people how to sail, people come to these events because they want to learn how to sail. Like, they don't want to come here and have somebody just take them around on a boat. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I would say the Vietnam vets are probably the oldest groups. I mean, we've had some characters that have shown up to our camps that are just the most motivated older folks that like are all in, you know, and this is such a lifetime sport.
Yeah.
You know, we make equipment for people who are paralyzed. So they can sail on board the boats. So we've had quads sail on board the boats.
I've got a little story about that one. The second or third time I was out with you guys, I was in a boat with, it was me, two warriors, and a coach, Dave. And I had come down from LA to San Diego that morning, and there was a just gnarly, like the worst traffic I've ever seen. So I ended up getting there late, and you guys were already out sailing. So you picked me up at the dock and took me out to the boat. We did, you know, like little, we sailed in a box all morning and blah, 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 came back to the dock for lunch, and everybody started, you know, we pulled the main in, started getting off the boat. And there had been one of the guys who was sitting in the hatch and the companionway to go down below. And it's a little J-22. So he's sitting there, and all I could see that was going on with him was that he was missing a thumb. He was handling the jib sheet, trash talking on the radio, having a great time. And somebody pulled a wheelchair up on dock. And next thing I know, you guys are pulling him out of the hatch there, and he's missing his legs from about 3 inches below the hips. And I was just floored.
Mm-hmm. You didn't know.
No, you couldn't tell. He was having such a great time, and that's what sailing does.
Yeah. And what we've found over the years is, like, at least this is with our program, what I've felt since... I was a Paralympic coach for a little while for the U.S. sailing team, and one of the reasons I ended up meeting folks in Paralympic sailing world was because I had a client who was a single-arm amputee. He wasn't a veteran, but he needed equipment that was built specifically for the boats that he raced. And so for 8 years, this particular client of mine, who's become one of my really good friends, I designed equipment and built stuff for him, and he could race against everybody. And he never once wanted to be specifically put in a boat made specifically for someone with a disability. Like, for us at Warrior Sailing, we want to go around using the club's boats. They're already there. So we have equipment that we drop into the boat so we don't put any holes in them. And we travel with this equipment that's pretty mobile. It's pretty standardized. Like, it's not anything special or specific for a person with different disabilities, but we have kind of three tiers of different kinds of equipment that we carry: benches, transfer benches, bars. And actually, where I'm sitting right now, there's a bar right here that I travel with, and that actually gets ratchet strapped into different boats, and I don't put any holes in the boat. And then somebody has a bar they can hang on to go across the boat. And what we've found is that the warrior himself or herself who has a physical disability really relies on that camaraderie and the trust that they know of the other veterans. Even if they don't know them, they know that they were a veteran. And so that camaraderie immediately begins at our camp, because they're relying on each other to get in and out of the boat. And the coach is there, who's their expertise, and they test the coach the first day to see if they're going to chew them up and spit them out, which that's why I tend to have pretty good coaches, so that they don't get chewed up and spit out. Less tears when you have coaches who are accountable. maybe it's sailed around the world a couple times. But the equipment that we bring to the camp is all part of that process, and it's pretty amazing. We've had high-level quads go sail a boat, and we've had people come back to the dock and say that's the first time they've been in a water sport or activity where they felt like they were in control, because they had some simple equipment that dropped into the boat. And it's not anything, I don't know, I don't see it any different nowadays, and we go race against everybody. We go to Charleston Race Week and have raced J-22s. We've done three world championships with veteran warrior sailing graduate groups, and they go with their equipment. We drop it in the boat, and they race against everybody.
That's cool. You know, we have cool history here with access, too. I mean, I think, Ben, I don't know if you know, but FDR sailed aboard the Iowa back in 1943, went over to the Tehran conference to meet with Stalin and Churchill. And back then in the 40s, they installed actually two elevators on the starboard side just to get him up onto the O-1 level, the first deck up, and also, I think, to the O-3, to the Admiral's Bridge. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's great heritage here. Of course, he was in a wheelchair, and there's a bathtub, which is a cool thing, you know, aboard the ship just for him. It's still here. But we've always embraced that, you know, and made sure that we had, we worked on accessibility early on. We've got well over $100,000 in elevator work that we've done. Right now, I believe we're the most accessible battleship in the world. We have four decks available to someone in a wheelchair. And that's pretty cool, just using three different wheelchair lifts, essentially. So stuff like that's really important to us as well.
Yeah, it's just awareness, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that all of us, so it goes back to gratitude. You know, it's all the things that we deal with on a daily basis that other people who have higher level disabilities, you know, for them to make it to a camp just to travel, or even just to make it to breakfast in the morning, not to mention traumatic brain injury, isolation, and things that they lost, and camaraderie that they don't have with their teams. But folks that have physical disabilities, they're up at 4:30 in the morning to get themselves ready to get to a camp. Like, the least we can do is drop a bench and make it comfortable for somebody. Geez, you know, like, put them in a bench. Let's make it happen. Let's get them out on the water.
So I heard you comment on fundraising. I was hoping Captain Roundup over here, you'll have to hear that story later. But you know, if you have any thoughts on fundraising or questions or.
Well, I was wondering how you, I guess, go about advertising the needs that you have for the various supplies. And you said that you had designed a couple of the specialized pieces of equipment yourself. But when you go out and say, hey, can I use your boat? What is that conversation like? Who are you going to?
Well, so the biggest thing when we first started Warrior Sailing, when we first started, it was at St. Pete Sailing Center in St. Petersburg, Florida. And it's one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is, like, yacht clubs are yacht clubs, sailing centers are sailing centers. Sometimes they have support amongst each other, but it's kind of like the difference between a private gym and a YMCA. And the accessibility and those sort of things are the same. And it's not as restrictive, and there aren't as many barriers of entry into sailing as most people think because of the network of sailing centers that are around these days. And so part of that is going places where people already have fleets of boats because they've already invested in a boat that they have that are the same. So J-22s and sonars is the name of the boats that we usually use at the camps. We're slowly incorporating J-70s because the clubs that we're going to are moving to kind of more modern, different boats. But they usually at nice or bigger clubs have a fleet of boats that the adult sailing program is based off of. So rather than us show up with all of our own boats, have to set them up and make them specifically made for somebody with a disability, the idea was, let's create equipment, bring it to the boat, and then we allow that, you know, it's not doing any harm to their boat. And a lot of times we've left equipment at the locations that we go sailing so that people have an opportunity to come back. So really it's more about the facility fee that we pay the clubs and other places that we go to. Some of that stuff is comped by the club, meaning that they raise money through their foundations to support us to show up. But, you know, I've always said that, you know, it's kind of pay to play, and accountability is a major thing that we really want to be the least intrusive to clubs as we possibly can, while also providing the best service for the veteran. And I have veterans who can go to a camp Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We don't have to do it on a weekend or a busy time. We can do a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday camp, which is why Moran gets stuck in traffic. But, you know, that's beside the point. So the boat discussion is, like, it's not as complicated as it might seem. Like, you know, it's a flat rate fee that other groups pay. Or if somebody comes in to do a regatta at the San Diego Yacht Club, they talk to their program and they talk to the San Diego Yacht Club and they rent the boats out. And it's a flat rate fee. And we have a classroom there. And then we have lunches that were provided. And we have local donors and supporters that support different meals. So some people cover breakfast in San Diego. Mm-hmm. Some people have us go out to dinner. We house the veterans in hotels. And if they're local, then they drive. And that's great if we can recruit locally to save that money. But that's also kind of what we talked about earlier, is, like, a lot of people wonder, you know, how can I help? Everybody wants to help, right?
Right.
But a lot of things that we don't need, and one of them is kind of new locations, because of all these things that we have, like the connections for the boats and the people that work there and people that work on the boats, they know where the equipment is. We have hotels that already know our partnerships and know how close it is to the sailing center or transportation or breakfast places, that we have a long, extensive wait list that we need to get through for our basic training camps for veterans. That have already applied and already want to come to one of our basic camps. And we have locations sorted for those things. And it's just a lot. It's just about keeping those existing programs moving forward and having the money that make it free for the veteran.
Right.
Right? So that's big. Our larger foundation that I was explaining earlier that operates Warrior Sailing, they pay the administrative costs for our program. So my salary and the other three people that work for Warrior Sailing to make sure this thing works and it moves along, all of our administrative costs are covered by that foundation and the boat donation program, so that when people donate money to Warrior Sailing, it's going to cover these expenses for boats, equipment, sails, meals, transportation, hotels, all of that stuff to make it free for the veteran.
Well, I think maintaining those relationships you have across the country is so important because, as you mentioned, there are four of you making this happen. So do you have volunteers? How are you empowering people around the country to help support and make this program successful?
I really appreciate that question because it's always a sensitive scenario. Is everybody wants to help. No one comes to us with a bad intention that they don't want to help. I mean, who doesn't want to help veterans and help them learn new skills? At our basic camps, and Moran saw it firsthand, the camaraderie that we develop between the veteran, the three veterans, and the coach is probably the most important dynamic. And the 21 to 27 veterans that we put in a classroom, it creates this sense of camaraderie and small teamwork that has been missing, really, from their time in service. And so volunteers at that level aren't really needed because we've got the coach and the three veterans, and there really isn't anything more awkward than being someone who's already socially awkward or isolated, and you're finally out of your house and you're with 21 to 27 new people in a room. The last thing we need is like 10 people standing in the back of the room with nothing to do. Right. Or if you're physically disabled, or if you have an adaptive need, watching somebody struggle to get into a boat on a dock isn't necessarily comfortable for the warrior. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to learn how to do this as a team. If you have two or three veterans that you already trust because they're veterans and a coach that knows sailing, we got the bases covered. Right. I mean, so we're kind of like good on volunteers for our basic camps.
Yeah.
The best thing to do, I mean, I hate to say it, but cash to support the program.
I hear you.
We put butts in seats and we make the experience what it is. We're dedicated to the veteran and we want to support those initiatives. We're trying to get more scholarships for travel expenses because that's one of the hardest things that we have to cover. Is like, you know, a guy is from the middle of the country or a guy, a gal's from the middle of the U.S. and wants to go to a basic camp. We have one in San Diego or Annapolis, and it costs a lot of money for some of these folks, and they don't have the money to do it.
Yeah.
I wish they could apply for travel scholarships so that we had money so we could make sure they get there. You know, people covering a meal, that's $400 that I don't have to raise.
Yeah, no, that's great. And it's awesome to see a program kind of operating itself and strengthening itself internally. You have program members that are helping make this thing run.
I got a comment, just it was kind of comical to me in a different way. You mentioned a donation program of sailboats and stuff like that. Having been a participant to some extent or the receiving end of that at a former institution I worked for, it was frankly awkward. A lot of the stuff that was donated was just junk at some elevated value, and you have to hang on to it for a couple of years for the tax purposes. But sometimes there was some wonderful stuff, and I'm not a sailor, Ben. I'm a motorhead guy, even though we do have a sail locker up here forward, just about 100 feet up ahead.
The term loosely. It's an awning locker.
Yeah.
Sail locker. That's what it says in the print. But
stuff with soft stuff instead of steel.
I was fortunate to live on a 51-foot Stevens, but it had motors in it, so it was one of the donations. But I appreciate the donation aspect.
Yeah, the larger foundation that I was talking about operates a really big boat donation program. One of the biggest in the country. The U.S. MMA Sailing Foundation is our parent organization. So if you do look up Warrior Sailing, we're a program of the U.S. MMA Sailing Foundation, and essentially that boat donation program pays all of our administrative costs. And the donated boats that we get are a little unique, you know. I mean, we have Volvo 70s and Mod 70s and some really big racing sailboats and things that the people that need tax deductions and want to assist to make this stuff happen. We have boats that are used for our program. So I have a Beneteau 40.7 and a J95, and they're simple boats that we can use in our program. J22's here. There's a couple boats that we have on the East Coast that are used now for deliveries and systems training. And those essential boats that are used in our functions and used for our programming are our workhorses. And we really use those things in those 3 years that we have them. And there are some boats that are really way out of our league for warrior sailing, and it's not realistic to throw a bunch of veterans on the boat that don't know how to sail if it requires professional sailors. Mm-hmm. Those boats operating for 3 years, when we cash them in, that money goes to support good organizations. Yeah. It helps make these things happen.
Just to clarify, USMMA is not a fight club, right?
No, we can talk about it.
Yes. U.S. Merchant Marine Academy?
Well done.
Well, so originally the Sailing Foundation started as a support organization for the Merchant Marine Academy, and that's really where it got its start. And it has, until even now, all of the racing sailboats that are at the academy at Kings Point, the Merchant Marine Academy, they're all owned by the Sailing Foundation and part of the boat donation program. So of those boats that are there that the cadets use, so 20-something boats that we have and operate from our boat donation program are at the academy being used on a weekly basis.
That's awesome.
By those cadets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Including the power squadron. So we're not just sailors. We have power boats there that the kids use that go out and, you know, they go around fishing and doing other things. I think they just try and get away from campus, which is good too. But they're learning nighttime navigation, and there's a lot of education stuff. Like I mentioned to you guys before, the boat donation program doesn't just support warrior sailing and not just Kings Point. We have a Sail Ahead program that's in Long Island, and they take veterans sailing on board a Hunter 38 that was donated to us. And they operate those boats and take a bunch of veterans out sailing there. We support Spectrum Sailing, which is a new program that a friend of mine started, and it's mirroring a lot of what Warrior Sailing does. They're traveling to different locations and putting on camps, sail camps for kids with autism.
That's
and
cool.
his child has autism, and he's a friend of mine. He's a sailor. He's like, how do I make this opportunity available to more families so that they can get their kids out on the water? And the boat donation program threw him a little bit of a grant, unrestricted funds to help them get off the ground. Because
awesome.
People want to pay for life jackets and equipment, but they forget that life jackets and equipment aren't really helpful if no one's using them.
Right.
And it takes people to put in the life jacket to make sure that boat and that equipment is used. And so it's just back to that fundraising.
I think all of us have in the nonprofit world or not-for-profit world, is that people want to buy something or give you something. And sometimes it's like, I just want to pay the power bill. I'd like to keep the lights on.
Yeah, unrestricted. The fact you know that is really
unrestricted good. Donations are what keep the institution, even our institution, afloat. And they're the hardest to get.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like your not-for-profit comment too, by the way.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's it's the social sector is like what I would say. You know, you can make a lot of money, maybe not doing as great of things for people, and no one bats an eye because it's a for-profit business. But as soon as you're a nonprofit business, if you want to raise money to get the best talent and the best people in the room, people want to give you another life jacket. I got plenty of life jackets.
No margin, no mission. And what's the statement that we use? Nonprofit status is a...
Nonprofit status tells you what,
it's a tax position.
It's a tax position.
Not a business plan.
It could be a business plan, but not for very long. I prefer the term not-for-profit rather than nonprofit. So many people in the nonprofit or not-for-profit world think, oh, I have a 501c3, so I don't need to make any money. And I'm like, well, you need to pay your staff, you need to pay the insurance, you need to pay the power bill. And so if you said the mantra, in fact, I first heard it from you, no margin, no mission. You have to generate revenue so that you can keep the mission moving forward. And whether that revenue is generated through donations or gate revenue or program revenue or whatever it is, the idea that, oh, you're a nonprofit, so you shouldn't charge me admission, or you're a nonprofit, and so you don't need dollars, is just simply, I'll be harsh here, it's just ignorant on the part of the people that say that.
It's I always reference that you get a bunch of nonprofit operators and people that work in that sector. We all get together and we all come up with the greatest ideas ever, and then nobody brought the bag of cash.
Right.
Yep.
Hate when everybody leaves the bag of cash at home and you're looking around going, you have a good idea, we have a good idea.
Yeah, sometimes I've even run into this kind of the sense among some of these, the cultures of these institutions, or I keep getting lectured on calling it organizations, but I'm institutionalized, so that's okay. But basically, it's almost like a dirty word, you know, and money's not, because you need that for that mission.
That's okay. Yeah. Like, we're just, have you guys ever listened to a TED Talk by Dan Pilotta?
Not that I recall, no.
I'll send it to Moran. You guys should check it out. It's how we think about charities is dead wrong. And
that makes sense to me.
It's an incredible, I usually listen to it once every couple of weeks, because it keeps me motivated to realize that what I'm doing, as long as you're focused on the mission and what you want to do, that's what the point is. Like, no one's trying to pad anybody and pad their wallets and trying to get rich. Trust me, none of us are trying to get rich. The idea is that if you are on mission and doing the right thing for the people you're serving, that doesn't mean that we have to be broke or that I can't operate, you know, going to meetings and getting million-dollar boats donated from the folks that are essentially distributing their wealth evenly out and around. And it's something that I talk about a lot locally too, is the Sailing Foundation has funded, after the boats are donated to us, we have to pay all the expenses. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. boats are expensive.
Yeah.
You guys know that better than anybody.
We got a really big one.
Really big ones with really big rooms and electricity.
Well, and it still fits the basic definition, which is a large hole in the water in which you pour vast sums of money. So
it's funny, people don't even in LA really understand, we pay our bills here. We have a power bill. We actually pay rent for our, it's not a slip, by the way, it's kind of long, 1600 feet, but you know, we pay all that stuff, you know, it's actually necessary. And in our case, there's always an assumption that you're a big gray ship and there's a big four letter word called Navy behind you. And it's not, you know, it's all in a nonprofit. It's a private institution or organization.
I think, yeah, but it's also just letting people know in a very simple manner, right? You know, like I try my best to, and this has been very beneficial to me personally. I've been able to give back, right? Like, that's the whole point. But the folks that I work with and everybody that's on mission, we have such a great opportunity to give back. That doesn't mean that we should have to go get three other jobs. You know, we're all just trying to make it, and everyone's trying to do the right thing. And if you have the people that are doing the right thing, and you do some, you know, research on the groups that you want to support, and this is one of the reasons that you want to support you guys or us, and we're being really honest and open that these things cost money. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's honesty.
To be really clear, each of us have 7 to 10 jobs, but it's all in one place.
And I always use a phrase, you know, there isn't anybody in this institution and really in the passionate institutions we partner with who couldn't pick their toolbox up, go somewhere else, double their income and half their workload. Right. And so just enabling people to come to work here and not have those extra jobs is part of making the mission go. Unfortunately, we are up against the time stop. So we're gonna wrap it up here for our listeners. If you enjoyed what you heard, or you want to throw rocks at us or just add a comment or a question, please go ahead and send an email to podcast@labattleship.com, or as I always say, labattleship.com.
Le battleship.
By the way, a domain I did not choose. I just want to go on record for that. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another exciting episode of Scuttlebutt.
Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, thank you, Ben.
Bye.
Yeah, thanks, thank you guys very much for all the time. I appreciate it. It's always good to have good discussions.